This episode is brought to you by the Women's Network.
It's a job to get a job. It's a cliche, but it's true. And you have to work at it and you have to do the homework and be prepared when you go in. And you have to work harder than you think you need to achieve your goals. You get what you work for, not what you wish for.
And happy new year. Welcome back to another episode of Redefining Ambition. I'm your host, Jamie Vinnick, founder and president of the Women's Network, the largest collegiate women's networking organization in the United States. And today, I'm very excited to welcome Lisa Gronatstein to our podcast. Lisa is the chief content officer at Adweek, a leading source of global marketing and advertising news. After receiving her master's in journalism from Columbia University, she opens up about how she got her foot in the door at her first job, as well as other publications, including Time and Newsweek. In this episode, Lisa shares how her persistence and a bit of luck helped her accelerate her career, her, quote, mind-blowing interview with Oprah Winfrey, and her predictions for the future of media. Head to our Instagrams at Redefining Ambition and at thewomens.network and let us know what you think. Hope you enjoyed the episode.
Welcome to the podcast, Lisa. So honored to have you on.
Thanks for having me here. I'm excited to be here.
Excited to have you. So in understanding more about your career and your life, it's important to understand your background. So if you wouldn't mind sharing, where are you from and what were some of the early influences in your life that perhaps made an impact on the trajectory of your career, your life, and some of your passions?
Wow. Okay. So I grew up in Ottawa, Canada. So I grew up in Ottawa, the capital of Canada, and was exposed to a lot around politics. My mother actually is now retired, but a travel agent, and I did a lot of traveling. So it really meshed together my interest in politics, in government, in travel. And I studied political science and history in college. You know, I thought maybe foreign service. I knew I wanted to do something kind of exciting with travel or just being out in the world. And initially I thought, well, I'll just become a professor. And after a little bit of time doing that in graduate school, I realized that I did not want to sit in a library, that I really did want to be out in the world. So that dream was chucked, which was fine. And the Gulf War started up, the first Gulf War in the early 90s. And I just thought, like, I have to be part of this. I have to see what's happening, be able to help in some way. I mean, I was right out of school. I didn't expect to become a person on air or anything like that. So I went to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which hosts still does a show called The National, which is the major news show in Canada. And I basically hung out in the lobby day in and day out and badgered the executive producer and begged him to let me in. And finally, he gave in and I became an editorial assistant, which was a fantastic learning experience. And I was a paid one. It was actually a job. So that was my first job out of school. And it was really exciting. And that got me started.
It got you started. So prior to that, you studied political science and then received your master's at University of Toronto, also in political science.
Yeah.
And so I always ask people, how did you get your foot in the door? So you were in, but what specifically did you say to open the door?
I was literally in the lobby buzzing, buzzing. I don't know if you can do this anymore, but buzzing up, you know, it was a gated fence. And I was lucky, the woman who oversaw the schedule and was the assistant to the executive producer kept answering the phone. And I just said, look, I have to come in. Just let me speak to him. I'll do whatever. And so it was just being persistent, respectful, mm-hmm. but persistent. And I there was a little bit of luck there, but it was a lot of persistence. And mm-hmm. and I wasn't, you know, I was looking around elsewhere at the same time. And I started to realize, like, maybe this is a career I should think about, or at least explore. I wasn't a journalist at that point, but it just started, it appealed to me.
So a lot of college students have this thought that is top of mind, which is, I have a lot of passions, a lot of interests, and I don't know where to begin or where to look. So how did you know, or rather, was this, you know, you had mentioned some of your inspiration, but was this something that was top of mind that, oh, maybe let me try this out, or were you overwhelmed by the possibilities?
Well, I'll be honest here, and I'm totally dating myself. but I around the same time, a movie called Broadcast News came out. And if you haven't seen it, it's awesome. And it's probably a little dated. It's from the early 90s. But it really gave you sort of a behind the scenes look at a newsroom. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. Like, you're running around, you're doing things. There's, you know, it appealed to who I am as a person and mm-hmm. my passions and just trying and learning about different things all the time and being in the mix. And so it just gave me a little nudge in the direction to explore. And that's what, you know, I think even if you have a lot of different passions, you should explore them all, see what sticks, what's authentic to you. See if you can do information interviews, read about the job, even apply for some and see as you're writing a cover letter whether this is something like you're really into or not. I found that's another thing I would do is, you know, I was kind of spraying out resumes at the time and just writing cover letters. I started to decide almost at that moment whether it was a job I was really going to want or it was something I was just applying to.
Was it a formative experience, or, you know, how did that lead to? Yeah. What was the experience like?
It was one of the best jobs I ever had because I joined like right at the start of the Gulf War. I was literally on the bottom rung, you know, and I had a shiny master's degree, and I thought, you know, I'd never been to a job to work. And so I thought, oh, well, I have to dress up. And I wore like a suit, like a dress suit. And even I think I might have even worn heels the first day. And then I realized I had to run up and down 5 flights of stairs handing out scripts, because back then they were carbon copies. I'm like ancient here, but I would run up and down stairs. And then so day 2, I wore jeans and sneakers, which was really awesome. But it just by being in the newsroom, being around all these professionals and seeing how they worked, I just picked it up like osmosis. I just learned a lot from being around and given opportunities to start with doing some research here or there, or try and write a script, or see how you look on camera, which I was a disaster, but, but it was, I got to try all these different things and I made great friends, and it was a great experience with very little responsibility. So I had the time to learn.
Mm. Okay. So you go off to Columbia's School of Journalism.
Yes.
First time in the U.S. permanently?
No. Permanently, yes. So I'll just backtrack and say that the reason I decided to go, there were two reasons, was that I felt like I only got as far as I could as an editorial assistant. I moved up to, I think I was a researcher and a associate producer and some other things. And I just never felt like I had the right skills. My writing wasn't good enough. I felt like I personally needed some formal training. And I really did not want to work in Canada. I love Canada. It's a great place, but I was much more interested in what was going on in the US. Mm-hmm. So to do that, and I did look into roles while I was working, but I needed a visa. So I just decided to apply to Columbia, see if I got in. It'd give me a student visa, work for a year, get a foot in the door somewhere, and then and go from there. And so that's what I did.
That's what you did. Mm-hmm. And it's top of mind for a lot of people trying to figure out if they should pursue a graduate degree, given the weight of the debt that they would incur and take on. Yep. In looking back at that experience, are you so glad you went to grad school? Did it open more doors for you? Or do you think that maybe you could have gotten to where you are today without that degree?
Well, for me, it was a special circumstance because I would not have been in the US. But for me, it was worth it. I learned a lot from the experience. It wasn't perfect by any means. There was a lot of waste, but I felt like I walked out of there with some new skills. I think now that the business has changed so much, mm-hmm. I don't know if I would recommend like a year or 2 year long program, maybe this is something down the road in the future. If there's micro learning or, you know, if you could take courses so you can, you know, you could focus on a certain skill, whether it's social media or, you know, whatever it is. I think there's different ways of going about it now, but you know, it's not fair to say to everybody, oh, it's such a waste of time, because it's a different experience for everyone. For me, it was worthwhile. Mm.
Okay. So you graduate, and where does your career take you next?
Well, it took me into the desert for a while. It was a little bit slow. There was a little sort of a recession. The economy had slowed down, and then, you know, digital hadn't really started up. It was very, very early days. And I did a lot of different things to keep, you know, to freelance. I wrote articles for newspapers back in Canada. I was a stringer for the New York Times Metro section. So I'd run out and get quotes and no bylines, but it was fun. I liked doing that. And then I what else did I do? I worked at a website for Condé Nast Traveler, helping them launch this review site, which was crazy. We were calling hotels and asking the color of their sand and typing it in. I did a lot of crazy things. But I worked for a columnist who shall remain nameless, but it was kind of crazy. And that didn't work out. And then I waited it out, and I was fortunate enough to have a family friend who introduced me to somebody who introduced me to somebody who was at Time. And I met, and as it turned out, there was some work. I was able to, am I really old, but I said, I knew how to use Netscape. And that was like, great, we're going to sign you up. You can be in our tech, work on their technology spinoff that we were doing at the time. And, so I knew a little bit about technology, and that helped. And I stayed there for 3 years, and I worked on something called Time Digital. And I did some general assignment stories. And it was a great experience. But again, like, I hit a wall. I was tired of, you know, coming home at 4 a.m, writing captions at literally at 4 a.m. I knew that to move ahead, I was going to have to leave. It was just that feeling you get, and, or I could be a researcher my whole career, but I didn't want to do that. So I left and went to Media Week, which changed everything.
So prior to that, you know, it's very difficult for a lot of people to feel like they can distinguish themselves or stand out, especially when they're working amongst a lot of other really bright talent.
Yes.
Was that a challenge? Did you experience anything related to, I don't know how to stand out, I'm not doing good enough work, I can't get promoted? And how do you know when to leave?
Yeah, I do think it's important to at least give it your best shot to see if there are ways you can stand out, not just go on your, you know, some gut instinct like, no, I think I've run my course here. You have to at least make the effort to stand out. And it was hard because there were and still are a lot of smart people at time. But I got involved in a news story that broke pretty late one evening. There was a plane crash off the coast of Long Island. And I just called in. I said, someone needs to go. Do you want me to go? And so they said, yes. I was a reporter for time.com. And then some of the notes that I shared with them ended up in the cover story. So that kind of helped. It was a horrible, tragic thing. And, I never want to see that again, but for my career, it brought some notice, which was great. But I still felt like a little itchy, like it wasn't moving fast enough. And I, you know, in hindsight, and you can really connect the dots after the fact, I realized I needed to go to a smaller place where I'd have more freedom to stretch. And that's what I did. I went to Media Week, where I was a reporter.
Okay. So at Media Week, you had mentioned that it was a game changer. When speaking about journalism, what were some of the moments that really stuck out to you that were career defining? I mean, the moment you just mentioned about covering a plane crash is one of them for sure.
Yeah.
It's grueling hours. It's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's never ending.
No, although my job was a little funny. So Media Week covered and it's back sort of as an event, but it covered the media business. My beat happened to be publishing. And back when I was covering it, it was the rise of magazines. They were peaking. And so, I interviewed everyone, Oprah, Rosie O'Donnell, Martha Stewart, John Kennedy Jr. On and on. I knew all the CEOs, the editors in chief. I knew the industry, and I tried to own it. It was very competitive, and I enjoyed that, you know, competing with my peers at other publications. But it was a very glitzy beat at the time, and we would be wined and dined, and we'd be going to these restaurants. It was ridiculous, and parties, the Forbes yacht. I mean, I have so many crazy stories. So it, you know, career wise, I mean, there were some stories. I broke a lot of stories. I covered, you guys wouldn't even remember this, but there was a Rosie O'Donnell sued a publisher for a magazine she did. And I was breaking stories on that and going to the trial, and my stories were being used as evidence, which was so cool. And, you know, we were all the reporters were looking and taking, you know, trying to see whose was going to get the most use for evidence. It was funny, not funny for that publisher, but anyway, it was just a great experience. To really learn and zero in on a niche and become an expert at it was a great skill to have. And then spend time there and get to know people. I grew into becoming an editor, and then, you know, went from there.
What was that like interviewing people? As you mentioned, like Oprah, what was that experience like?
Oh, it was great. I mean, you know, it was hard not to be starstruck.
Right. I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, but it was, look, I had to be professional, and Oprah was over the phone, and I was told I had 20 minutes with her, if that, and she ended up talking to me for an hour and reciting a Maya Angelou poem in the midst of it. I mean, it was just like mind blowing. It was really exciting, you know, especially for someone young and starting out who there's no way these people would have talked to me otherwise. You know, I remember leaving Time and the managing editor on my way out said, "Oh, by the way, let's definitely get some lunch together." And I'm thinking, you wouldn't have even looked at me 2 days ago before you knew that I was going to this job. So it was really about where I was going. It wasn't, I had to remember often that it wasn't about me. It was about the publication, the brand that I was representing that opened doors. And, you know, I helped some, with some of that, but you just have to kind of balance it and check your ego. But it was a lot of fun meeting those people, especially if you're into meeting those kind of people.
I'm curious how that would impact one's ego. How did that change your perspective on the people in the industry as well?
Oh, I was such an insecure writer. It did nothing. I never thought I was good enough, you know, and I worked hard, but I knew I had the swagger of a good reporter, but I always counterbalanced that with my writing, which I never felt was good enough. And, you know, so it would ebb and flow, but I had to really be careful because I didn't want to alienate anyone. And I needed to work with them to give me stories. So I had, you know, I was professional about it. I did my best. Maybe others would think otherwise. Who knows? But it was a long time ago.
What do you think made you a great reporter? What were some of those skills?
I think I'm curious by nature. I like to hustle. I move fast. I'm competitive. I think being competitive is really important. And I like to get to the truth. I really do like to get to the essence of a story and get it out as fast as possible.
Mm. Okay. So when you did feel like you hit a wall, mm-hmm. your career took you where next? And what made it feel like you hit a wall?
Well, the next wall I hit was actually, it was two things happening at the same time. There was the Great Recession in 2008, and the whole industry kind of blew up. And my job was being eliminated, but I was fortunate that I was looking before that happened. And so I went to work for somebody I knew who was at a digital startup, which doesn't exist anymore, but it did content discovery. So it was like content marketing. And I was the editorial director who helped work with brands and agencies to find content that they could put next to their ads that would encourage people to click on it and read through. So I did that for a few years. I didn't love it at all, really, but I learned a lot from the experience. I worked side by side with salespeople, people in business development, people on the tech side. And I got a lot from the experience, and I still think it's paid off even, you know, 10 plus years later. But that company went under as part of, again, the recession. And I was lucky. A good colleague and friend of mine was still was what became then known as Adweek, and brought me back temporarily. And things happened there, and the whole staff left. And because one of the editors had been let go and they all followed him. So I stayed and helped rebuild the staff. And almost 10 years later, I'm still here. It's crazy.
So you have mentioned you joined Time when Time Digital was this new and exciting endeavor. And you had mentioned the startup you had joined where This was right before content marketing and influencer mm-hmm. became more mainstream. It sounds like you were hitting a lot of these marks right before it became mainstream. So you were gaining experience in these critical areas within your industry before it became less specialized or it became something that more people had to learn. How were you able to identify all these different trends?
That's funny. I never thought of it that way. I'd love to say that I'm, you know, really smart and forward thinking, but
the crystal ball.
It was like, yeah, it was no, I mean, I literally tripped over them. Part of it was luck. Part of it may have just been in the right place at the right time, knowing the right people, just putting yourself out there, seeing what was happening and just being around people who were on the bleeding edge of whatever, whether it was technology or marketing or edit, you know, covering a certain slice of the industry. I was lucky. I really was, but I worked hard to, once I that luck was there, but I worked hard to get it. Like it wasn't just handed to me.
And I want to add that Lisa was emailing me at 11:30 p.m.
for an
interview.
And you were writing back, and we both shouldn't be doing that, but yes.
So
I'm always on.
Well, I want to talk about work ethic. So at Adweek, you are now the chief content officer, really powerful role, powerful person at the company. I'm curious to know from your perspective, what made you continue to climb the ladder to reach really the pinnacle of the industry? And if you could talk about some of those skills or your attitude perspective on that.
Sure. Well, there were a lot of lessons learned along the way. Some were hard, you know, in terms of learning how to be a manager, how to become a leader. And things change. I'm still learning every day as the whole workplace, workforce changes and culture changes. You have to be very agile and move with the trends. I spent a lot of time at different levels and just mastered those and went to the next one. And I just decided to stay at Adweek because it's always different. Technology has made everything change so rapidly across all industries, but especially media and marketing. And I just really like the fast pace of change and being able to chronicle it and try and predict what's next. It's just an area that I've always been interested since MediaWeek, and being able to help from a strategic perspective, not so much, you know, from a reporter or even as an editor anymore, but strategically, where should our company go? What should we cover? Where's the audience going? So my job has changed over time to look at it more in a macro way than in a segmented way. So that makes it interesting. I need change. Otherwise, if things don't change, then maybe, you know, I'll hit that wall again. Who knows?
You know, you touched on leadership, which I love talking about. You are in a very powerful position now, but we talk a lot about in the Women's Network that titles don't equate to being a leader. It's so much more mm-hmm. than that. When was the moment you realized that, oh, I am a leader? Or when did you realize that you were able to demonstrate great, exceptional leadership skills?
It was probably years ago. There were different moments, but I think that really forged who I was and where I wanted to be was during the blackout in 2003. At that time, you know, we were all connected through technology, but not on the level we're at now. There wasn't Zoom. There was texting. We were all looking for power sources back then, but it was a lot harder to put out a magazine back then and coordinate a staff. And, you know, part of New York was underwater and there was a lot of things going on. And just working with the team to rally and get everybody working and focused on the target rather than the situation we were all facing ourselves in. I guess it was a bit of a life-changing experience or career-changing experience where I realized that, yes, I can marshal people. We can move forward. We can get this done in a time of crisis. Little did I know what would be happening in 2000, which was like 3 days. Oh, my God. Like, you know, but that lesson definitely helped me with the past year and a half, for sure.
You're in an industry that is constantly changing, constantly evolving. What has been in the last 5 years the biggest adjustment to the industry or change that has really catapulted the industry or moved it in a way that it was a game changer?
Well, I'd say social media for sure. It's changed everything from being, you know, you have a 24-hour window to get something out to digital to being, you know, an hour to being like you have seconds, but also the chance of error is higher and just brand, you know, just making sure you're careful with the brand on social media. Things happen. And as you know, people pile on and you can get caught up very quickly and easily in something controversial that you had no idea was going to blow up. So I would say just, I think social media really accelerated the pace of journalism and news and reaction from the audience and from everyone. And that's across all industries as well.
You hear a lot of talk about how anyone can have a microphone now. They do have a microphone.
True.
Anyone can go viral. Anyone can have their own platform as big as they want. What do you think are the dangers of that that impact journalism? I know that's a very broad question, but more specifically, how has that impacted your specific line of work?
Well, it's... everybody does have a microphone and it's amazing that when certain things are said that they get picked up, whether you want them to, or maybe you didn't want them to, but there is a lot of power and it's scary when the power just kind of explodes and you can't control it anymore, for better, for worse, for better. Sure. Like, we want to go viral for sure, but sometimes you don't want to go viral. And you also don't necessarily love it when, you know, one person just completely creates a mess for you online that may or may not have been warranted, or they don't understand the context of a story you wrote or the nuances behind it. So it can be really challenging. So that's what I'd say about it.
As chief content officer, you have a lot of responsibility that falls within your umbrella. Mm-hmm. What do you do day to day? What are some of the responsibilities that are a part of your portfolio? You're at this amazing company, chief content officer.
Thank you.
Big platform.
Yes. And I get to send out emails today to a whole bunch of award winners. So, I mean, look, I do high level, I do strategy. I worked on our editorial calendar that crosses all our different platforms and leading that effort across events, editorial, our community efforts. We have a lot of different councils and groups that we host, and just coordinating the entire team and making sure that both all of editorial, sales, marketing, and so on are all aligned in what we do and getting consensus, which is insane. But somehow, knock wood, we're well on our way. And I'll have to get that done by the end of this month, but we'll be done sooner. So because sales has what's called an upfront, where they will go early to market with all our offerings and try and build packages. But they need all of this done first, all of this planning done. So you really have to be good at juggling different people's needs, you're being pulled in different directions, high and low. And like I said, I have to send out some emails about awards today. So there's still grunt work to be done. I also oversee programming for our events, which is a big part of our company now. And we have a team that does the day-to-day, but I still help steer it. And occasionally I'll reach out on behalf, you know, if it's a big name, they need help. There's a whole bunch of things I do, but those are just a few examples.
I want to get to negotiation. Is this something you have struggled with? Did you have an epiphany that some of your male colleagues or counterparts were negotiating their salaries when you interview and bring people on? Have you noticed behavioral differences?
Actually, I'm happy to say that I've interviewed many women, and I'd say the women now are much more assertive in asking for increased salaries, much more than in the past, much more forward about it, just, you know, respectful, but it's impressive because when I was their age, I probably wouldn't have. I know I didn't. So I'm happy to see that. And when we can, we accommodate it. So I'd say that women rising up now have a better sense of negotiation and strategy than their predecessors did, for sure.
That's reassuring to hear. What advice would you offer to recent graduates interested in breaking into marketing or advertising or media position?
Well, simple, read Adweek. Read Adweek, and aside from that, and read all the business publications, not just Adweek. But there's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of great newsletters. Sign up for them, absorb, just be a sponge, learn a lot, attend free events, and usually students can get a break if not for free. Try and network as best you can. LinkedIn is a good place to start. I've definitely connected with a few students who had questions, and I was happy to answer them. And I'm sure other editors and content chiefs would do the same, or chief marketing officers. It's working. It's a job to get a job. It's a cliche, but it's true. And you have to work at it, and you have to do the homework and be prepared when you go in, and you have to work harder than you think you need to achieve your goals. So that's what I'd say. Just work hard and you get what you work for, not what you wish for.
I like that. Yeah. So in the Women's Network, we're always talking about how important it is not just to quote network, and I'm air quoting that word, has some certain connotations associated, not just to network with people who are more senior to you, but to develop meaningful, authentic relationships in your peer-to-peer network, horizontally networking. I'm curious the impact that your peer-to-peer network has had on your career and the importance of building relationships with people similarly aged in similar cohorts. There's so much emphasis in college to reach out to people on LinkedIn who are very senior at their companies. And while that's great to do, there's value in building your network horizontally speaking. So what impact has that had on your life or career?
I absolutely agree with that. I'd also say, be nice to your colleagues. whether you like them or not, people will circle back and come back into your life and help you out. And that's happened to me a number of times, and I've helped other people. You know, we all started at the same time, and we've all at MediWeek, for example, and we've been in touch for 20 years, and I've grown up with these guys, and they're guys. And we help each other out when we can, and we've created our own network. I mean, we all have different jobs now, and people are doing their own thing, but it is important to be able to reach back and just get gut checks or hear what's going on at another company, what's happening, whether there's a job for you there or you don't want to work there for some reason, and not just hear it high up. So there's definitely some benefits to doing that.
You mentioned guys. You also mentioned mm-hmm. you're a very competitive person, and yep. also mentioned behavioral changes in, say, negotiation. Mm-hmm. What makes you most hopeful or optimistic about progress being achieved in gender equity, gender parity, in greater representation at all levels of leadership?
Well, we're not quite there at all, but I think we're improving. And I think the past year and change really was an inflection point with the conversation about DEI, and even before that, Sheryl Sandberg initiating the conversation with Lean In, that really got the women's side of it, and Time's Up. They needed Time Out, but we were talking about Time's Up, and all of these movements really have propel that into social media, which really has an impact on our culture. There's much more public shame in bad behavior, which I think has really helped to course correct a lot of pay inequities or inequities in representation. We still need a ways to go, but the fact that we're now seeing people hired in DEI roles is great, because, you know, just a few years ago, that wasn't even a thing. Now it's a concerted effort, and it's definitely something at Adweek that we look at, both in terms of our hiring practices, as well as representation in our coverage. Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, we're going to transition into our lightning round of questions. I'm going to ask you a question. Let me know what pops up in your mind. First question, what are you most proud of?
I guess I'd say I'm most proud of longevity, of being a journalist as long as I have. It's not an easy profession to be in long term. Mm-hmm. And I've had a good run. We'll see where things go, but I'm proud of the work I've done. And how I've contributed to the industry that I cover.
In one to two or three sentences, what is the future of the advertising industry?
The future is going to be very much more accelerated with 5G coming through. I think there's going to be a lot more. We're going to have to see technology take on even greater roles with more connectivity through artificial intelligence. There's going to be a lot of our data, as it already is, floating around. We're just going to be a much more connected world, even I think more than we can even imagine than we are right now.
Wow. What are three hard skills recent graduates wanting and aspiring to enter into this industry should possess? Two to three.
Well, as in terms of the industry, an understanding of marketing technology or MarTech, really having a grasp for that, understanding how to leverage data. And the third I'd say is just be open to change and embracing new skills as quickly as they come up.
What is your favorite way to consume news?
I'd say lately it's newsletters. Yeah.
If you could leave our listeners with one lasting piece of advice, what would that be?
Let's see. I'd say be nice to people on the way up and on the way down, because you are going to see them again. And you may be that person on the way down or on the way up.
That's great advice. Well, Lisa, thank you for joining Redefining Ambition. It was such a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you. I love doing this and you're doing a great job.
Thanks so much for listening to an episode of Redefining Ambition. If you like what you heard, please make sure to subscribe, rate us, tell your friends, and if there's anyone you think we should have on our show, let me know. Join me next Tuesday for a brand new episode of Redefining Ambition. We'll see you all then. Take care, everyone.